Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com. It's this is podcast episode 54 for Tuesday, November 22nd, 2011. This is coming from the road in the motorhome. A lot of background noise. You may hear cars, trucks going by. We may even get the sound of a train because we're near train tracks. So, and if you noticed, we have no intro and exit music again because that's how we're stuck with it here on the road. So, and at any moment we may get interrupted by dog or cat sounds because they're in the motorhome with me. Okay, so the thing that I wanted to cover today was something that we've encountered on the road. And I thought it was very interesting, and I hope maybe you'll find some interest in it as well. Without naming specific campgrounds, because we've stayed at a variety of campgrounds over the past few months, and even last year when we were traveling the different trips that we made last year with the motorhome in different campgrounds. One of the things that I noticed was that these campgrounds tend to prefer cash, and I can't blame them. You know, if you're dealing with credit cards or even debit cards or whatever, you're dealing with banks and you're dealing with credit card charges and you're dealing with the possibility of fraudulent cards, and all those things add to your expenses as a business. So it's a lot more convenient if you can just deal on a cash basis. And of course, many of the campgrounds that we've stayed at prefer cash as opposed to other means of payment. Now, within that, since it is primarily a cash business, the registration process is a little bit different according to whether, in not all places, of course, this varies from campground to campground and location to location, but what we're seeing trend-wise is a difference in the registration process if you're paying in cash or if you're paying with some type of card, whether it be debit or credit or whatever. So looking at it from an anarcho-capitalist point of view, and if you're a regular listener of this podcast, you know that I strongly promote underground economies, what might be considered black markets or free markets or underground markets, or there's a variety of different terminology we could use. In any case, my view, as I say, if you're a regular listener, you know this, my view is the best way to deal with the state is to not deal with the state. It's to make every effort to make every purchase that you can make and every transaction that you can make and every all the labor that you can utilize in means that are not taxed, in ways that avoid the complications of all levels of the state. And again, if you're a regular listener of this podcast, you realize that I consider the corporate world as part of the state, because the marriage between the giant corporations and the governments of the world produce fascism, and that fascism is the state. So the governments of the world certainly are the state, and the major corporations of the world, along with the major bank industry, the major bankers, the bank industry, all these things are aspects of the state. It's all married and blended as one thing. And the true puppet master behind all this is that entity that we call the state. It's the imaginary being that exists because of our will for it to exist and because we believe in it. And as we step away from traditional markets, and I shouldn't say traditional, because traditional markets are free markets. What's not traditional is for the state to manipulate markets. That's not traditional. That's new. That's mostly happened on a global scale in the last 100 years. And on local scales, of course, the state has attempted to interfere with markets since its inception, since the inception of the state, that is. The market pre-existed the state into all the way back into antiquity. But the state always, in all of its manifestations, attempts to mess with the market. And the reason why is because the state can't control people unless the state controls the market. So if we want to be free, the best way to be free is not to confront the state. Don't fight the state. Don't march against the state. Don't wave banners at the state. Don't attack representatives of the state. Don't make your struggle against the state in the exact fashion that the state wants you to. If you fight the state with violence or with property destruction, with aggression in any form, you're fighting the state the way the state wants you to fight them. But if you fight the state smart, the state has no defense. And how is that? That is by using the market, the true market, the free market, the underground market, the black market, however you want to view it, the gray market, the illegal economy, the unreported economy, the unrecorded economy, informal economy, agorism, however you want to view it, it's that aspect of free market that does not involve the state. And now let's take this back to campgrounds and the wonderful thing that I've observed with campgrounds. Much of the industry, much of the especially late night, a campground is something that very often a lot of their a lot of the campers, the people who are utilizing the campground, will show up after hours in the evening because they're on the road and they arrive at the campground late. And so there's a number of ways that the campgrounds generally provide so that you can check in late at night when the campground offices are closed. And one of those ways is often just to put cash in an envelope and slide it through a secure opening of some kind or a box or whatever. And that method is really good because, like I was saying a minute ago, the registration process is very different. If you have to swipe a card in a reader and you register information with them, then there's this electronic paper trail that means that they have to not only acknowledge that you're there, but that you're real and that the card that you're using is not fraudulent. It's not stolen, so they need some kind of identification. They need to make sure that the vehicle that you're in is correct and so forth. So they will generally want something like a home address, perhaps a phone number. What state are you from? Often they'll ask your license number off of the vehicle that you're parking in their park. But when you arrive late and you just slip cash into an envelope and slide it through that slot, and you pull your motorhome or your camping equipment, whatever you have, into one of their spaces, and you hook up and you spend the night and you leave in the morning before their office even opens, they don't care who you are. They only care that that envelope with the cash went through the slot. And that is a free market. Practically, of course, we're still involving the Federal Reserve if we're using Federal Reserve notes. But I sincerely believe, and I hope for, the day that we can slip, little cards with strands of precious metals, and that'll be taken the same way. As a network of like-minded people begins to fan out and spread out, and more campers and more RVers and more campgrounds begin to understand precious metals and commodity money. There may vary in the very near future, there may be a day when you can take that envelope and slide a few, what I'm talking about, these little cards like you get from, there's a variety of them now that are available, from different sources, but the source that I'm always talking about is, Shire Silver. Shire Silver takes little tiny amounts of silver and gold and laminates them and makes a little credit card size passable, tradable commodity out of them. And so you can have a few grams of gold or a few grams of silver laminated into a card with the amount that's on in there stamped onto the card so that it's known and who the person is who backed it, who's saying that this is this amount of precious metal. And those are available. You can get those. Again, Shire Silver is not a sponsor or anything. I don't make any money from Shire Silver, so I just like what they do. So I talk about them regularly. But someday, campgrounds, I believe and I hope, will catch on to this, and campers will catch on to this. And then we won't have to put Federal Reserve notes in those little envelopes. We can just slide some little cards in there with some a few grams of precious metals, and we're covered, and we're taken care of, and we spend the night, and we drive off the next day, and nobody knows about it. But today, we still are stuck with using Federal Reserve notes. And that's the fun part about what I observed with camping. Because you pull into these campgrounds, and they have all the facilities are in there. You just hook your motorhome up or whatever you're driving, and you can, like we had, have Wi-Fi in different campgrounds that we've been in. We've had a cable hookup for cable TV. We have, they generally have electrical and sewer, and water is all available at these campgrounds. And typically, they will have like a bathroom and shower facility so that you can shower somewhere outside of your motorhome, or for campers that don't have that kind of facilities in their either in their RV or whatever they have. And the thing, well, I'll go into that in a second. So here we have the wonderful opportunity for a cash society. And it's happening around us every day. And it's happening right under the wire, where the government doesn't even see it or know that it's happening. And there's no way to really enforce the government's rules regarding this type of activity. Because like I said, very often the campers pull in late at night, they hook up, they sleep, they use the facility. It's all paid for through an envelope, and it's all on the honor system, by the way. And then they drive away the next morning, and everybody is happy, and there's no record of it, or there's very little record of it, or it's all voluntary as to how much record there is of it. And one of the things that that really struck me about this process is one of the campgrounds that we were in. We had been traveling for quite some time, and we had been stuck in a lot of construction zones, slowdowns, and just ongoing construction on the highways that is actually, I won't go into it in this podcast, but it's actually quite a scam. They have perpetual construction on the highways, and this keeps key donors of politicians keep their own personal construction companies employed, and those politicians then funnel key tax money into specific road programs of those key donors. So it's a never-ending loop of cash, of money going out of the taxpayers' pockets through the politicians' hands into the construction companies, and then back into the politicians' re-election fund, and of course that generates more taxes, and it just continues with the loop, and all the time you're being robbed, and the roads still stink, and they never get done with construction. That's how the scam works. But anyway, so what I observed pulling into different campgrounds is that there are these very plain-looking, generally trailers, generally not motorhomes, and generally not campers, and as in the type that sits on the back of a truck, but fairly generic trailers in these campgrounds that are near these construction sites. And within one trailer, you might have a pretty good collection of people, more than you would think that trailer ought to be housing. And these trailers generally have all men of a nationality not necessarily obvious. However, it might be said that it's quite clear that they're not U.S. citizens. And so they're illegal aliens, obviously. And they're working those construction jobs under the wire. Of course, they can't be out in the open because, you know, that would produce a scandal that illegal aliens are working on the highway system and that politician who's lining his pocket and the construction company who's lining their pocket, all the whole thing would fall apart if it became obvious. So everybody kind of just nods, winks, and looks the other way. But the illegal aliens are employed anyway. And where do they stay? Well, actually, they stay all over. But one of the places is in campgrounds, because campgrounds are, relatively speaking, a cash society. And so they can go there. They can check in without encountering anyone. They can utilize all the facilities as far as bathrooms, showers, have all of the amenities that go with the campground. And as long as they don't make a fuss, as long as they don't bring attention to themselves, they can quietly live among all the citizens, the so-called citizens, because these are illegal aliens. They can live right among the citizens, and nobody says a word. Because as long as they're quiet about it, no attention is drawn to them, and they can continue earning far more here than they were making back in their home country, and perhaps support, you know, a large extended family back in their home country by their labor and the money that they earn here, while living very inexpensively in what are often company-supplied campers, trailers, in places like that. Now, some people would get very worried. Well, we can't have all these illegal aliens living around. Oh, it's dangerous. Well, you know, let's consider this. Without getting too much into the whole immigration issue, let's just consider this. You could say that there are three types of illegal aliens. There are three types of people who come into the United States under the wire, or, you know, without the blessing of the state. One type would be your stereotypical drug smuggler or drug dealer or drug cartel employee, one might say. Those people might be very dangerous. They might be armed. They might be capable of some pretty bad stuff. But keep in mind, if it weren't for the state's prohibition, they wouldn't be here. That type of illegal alien is here strictly because the state creates the opportunity for them to be through the state's silly prohibitions. So the image that the media gives us of the dirty illegal alien smuggling in the nasty drugs, and he's dangerous and he's mean and all those things that we think of, he's a criminal, that whole image created by the mainstream media is the fault of the state. There would be no illegal aliens. So speaking of podcasting from the road, so to speak, we have a slight interruption there. I'll try to jump back into the flow as best I can. So I kind of got thrown off there. I'll try to pick back up as best as I can. That's the problems of being broadcasting out here in the motorhome, out on the road, so to speak, and without a controlled studio as or at least an office, as I normally do. Normally, if you're new to the podcast, normally we don't have this type of interruptions. We have dogs barking and things like that, birds squawking. But typically it's a little smoother than this. Anyway, so I think we were talking about, or I think I was talking about, because you weren't talking, you were just listening. It'd be nice if you could talk, and that way I could interact with people. Maybe we can, if we get enough listeners and we grow a little bit more, maybe we can set up kind of something like a Skype thing where we can do a listener call-in thing and do a live. That would be fun. Anyway, back to the topic. You know, I think I was talking about how the state creates the most dangerous aspect of the illegal alien, illegal immigrant problem, in the sense that those that we think of as dangerous and as the criminal element of illegal aliens, those are actually a problem because the state has created the problem. The state drives the drug war. The state has created the black market. The state criminalizes activity that would normally be done by companies and would normally be done safely, but because the state has interfered with it, then gangs and the black market take over, and it becomes a dangerous thing. So if you take that aspect of the illegal immigrant problem out of the picture, because we're not dealing with them, that's something the state created. That's a whole different issue. Now we have another aspect of illegal immigration, and that would be those people who are in poor countries, and they figure out that if they get to the United States, they can get one way or another free health care, welfare of one kind or another, government handouts of one kind or another.
Stop, Nikki.
Or in other ways, they can essentially live off of the American taxpayers if they can just get here. Now, that's actually the mainstream media will make that group out to be much larger than they actually are. You get the megaphones of the mainstream media, the Bill O'Reillys and the people like that who just make their living off of sensationalism and lies. And they try to portray that segment of the immigrants as being somehow dominant, just like they try to portray the violent criminal aspects as being dominant. And both those are lies by the mainstream media, just fear-mongering in order to keep people afraid of immigrants. And then we have the third classification of immigrants, and that's by far the vast majority of immigrants are here quietly. They have to be quiet because any attention brought to them at all, and they're under arrest or they're sent back to their own country or what, or, you know, no matter what, they're without options. And those are the ones that are here specifically to work and earn money. Now I hear a train coming, so I'm going to pause for a moment while the train goes by, and hopefully I can pick it back up on topic here. Okay, let's see if we can pick it back up now that the train is mostly passed. So we have this segment of the immigrant population, which is, as I said, by far the vast majority of illegal immigrants are here quietly, trying their best not to be noticed, not to be seen. These people that I'm talking about make great efforts not to have encounters with the police. So these are not going to be the criminal element. These are not going to be the ones that are showing up at the hospital for free care and expecting, signing up on welfare rolls for free handouts. These are the people who typically a male, generally a young, healthy, working-age male will come to the United States with a group and try the best that they can to work as much as they can and earn as much money as they can to send back home to support their families, and they will do so as quietly and as much as possible without drawing any attention to themselves. And that number, the number of people like that, is massive. It's huge. Keep in mind, any estimate of the size of that group that's done by the government is going to be a lie, because they're either going to want to expand that number to get your sympathies, or they're going to try to shrink that number to try to justify their own so-called success in fighting illegal immigration. So either way, there's going to be elements in the government that are going to want to distort that number one way or the other. So you really can't believe anything the government says about how many illegal aliens are here quietly working. But campgrounds is where you can see this process in a sense, in a very pure form, because they're there, they're very quiet, they're using the facilities without making any fuss whatsoever, and they're just wanting to earn their money and then either go back home and enjoy their money or send their money home and continue working so that their family can live a better life in whatever third world country that they're coming from. And now let's go back to the campgrounds that I have personally stayed in, and specifically those recently, where there were these working groups, these teams of working men who were quite clearly illegal immigrants. And I shouldn't really call them immigrants, because an immigrant is a person who's moving to a place to stay, to immigrate. But these are not. These are just strictly here trying to make a living and trying to support their family. Now, some people would hold that against them, but, you know, I think the person who would hold it, you have a person in a village in some third world country where the average income for the village is something like maybe $600 or $800 a year is the average income for everybody in the village, for, you know, any individual in the village. And they can come here and make that in a week or in a couple of weeks. I don't know how any honest person can hold it against someone if a man wants to leave that village and go to another place and earn more money so that his family can have a better living. Now you say, "Oh, all I want for them to do is check in as they come through the door." Well, an idiot says that. I'm sorry, but that's just stupid. Anybody that's ever tried to deal with immigration and naturalization services on any level should know better than that. Go down and get your driver's license renewed. Now imagine what it's going to be like trying to get through the border. I mean, that's just stupid. I don't even like dealing with people who start the conversation off that way. You know so little about what the discussion is that I don't have the patience to deal with a person like that. These are honest people. These are hardworking people. These are family, generally speaking, these are family people, and they are not criminals. Now, some fat politician might sit back and draw a line on a map and say, anybody cross that line without my permission is a criminal. Well, he's an idiot too. Sorry, sometimes these things frost me. I've spent a lot of years working side by side with people who didn't have their proper papers and couldn't go to the state authorities with their proper papers and have it all lined up, because the state has so many layers of bureaucracy to get through. If you have enough money, you can come into the U.S. If you have enough money, you can have all the paperwork taken care of for you. Now, I know this by personal experience with family members who have immigrated here from foreign countries, and from very close friends who have immigrated here from foreign countries. For example, I know quite a few people who immigrated to the U.S. from Australia, from New Zealand, from England, from Ireland, and from, from Mexico, obviously, and also from Thailand. And all of those people had, that I'm talking about here, all the people that I knew personally in those situations had plenty of money to get through the immigration process. And yet none of them went smoothly. It took a lot of money and a lot of time and a lot of effort to try to get through the system legally. And some of them, after years of trying, one individual that I know of specifically from Thailand, my own brother put a lot of money and a lot of effort into trying to get him into the U.S. And during the course of the process, he was very old, but he was the father of a family member, and we were trying, not me, I wasn't active in it, but my brother was trying to get him into the U.S., and it took so long that he died of old age before we could get him into the U.S. He couldn't even get over here to visit, couldn't come over and visit his own family, because there were so many hoops to go through. The man had no criminal history whatsoever. There was no logical reason to keep him out, but he was kept out anyway. And we were faced with hurdle after hurdle after hurdle to try to get him into the United States so that he could see his family in his declining years. And the State Department wouldn't let it happen. Now you take that situation and you say, okay, if these poor illegal immigrants who are just over here to work, if they had just stopped and checked in at the border, I'd be okay with that. Well, the people with enough money to go through all the hoops and to try to go through all the stages and everything else to try to get here are not the people who are going to come here and take jobs at low wages. These are people who are educated people. The people that I'm talking about specifically that I know who had the money to go through everything legally, they were not going to come over here and take bottom end wage, physical labor jobs. They're not in that classification. Anyone in a third world country who wants to come to the U.S. and who is willing to take entry level work, physical labor work, hard physical labor work, road work, roofing work, yard maintenance work, farm labor work. Anyone from a third world country who wants to come to the U.S. to do that type of work is not going to have the financial means to go through all the hoops. And the state sets it up like that on purpose. Okay. Let me get off my soapbox a little bit and get back to my real topic here. So within these campgrounds, you have trailers full of these guys who are being as quiet as possible, who want as little attention as possible, who want to work during the seasons that they're here or for whatever length of time that they're here. They want to work as much as possible, earn as much wages as possible, and send it back to support their families and their loved ones. And now here was the interesting thing that I observed. As you drive across the United States and you stop at roadside rests, and you go into the restroom facilities in these roadside rests, and you're going to have a wide variation of cleanliness according to which roadside rest you're in and according to whether they have staff in place, or if they have a cleaning crew that just comes by on an occasional basis or whatever. Some of those roadside rests are quite dirty, and some are fairly clean. Graffiti, sometimes there's an effort to cover or in other ways not have graffiti, and sometimes that effort is less than successful. But when you go into these private campgrounds, even the ones that, like I was describing a minute ago, that have quite a few of these work trailers with quite a few of these illegal immigrants in there staying and using those bathroom facilities and using those shower facilities, even in those, you have outstanding bathrooms, clean, spotless, clean floors, clean toilets, clean urinals, clean showers, clean mirrors. That's what you find, even though it's being heavily used by these illegal aliens who are trying to make a living. So that in itself should be evidence that these illegal aliens are trying their best not to be a problem. And then sometimes you can see them in, because they need other things. They need clothes, they need food, other supplies like that. So you'll see them in, like Walmart or whatever, generally all together, in a group of two to four to six, moving through, trying to, take advantage of the prices and the abundance of supplies that are here without drawing any more attention than they have to. But, you know, you have to feel for them, because imagine yourself in any foreign country, it wouldn't really matter where, if you were one of several groups that, that, you know, let's just say you're an American. Most of our audience here is American. So let's say you're an American and you're in any particular country. Let's say you go to Paraguay and there are, let's say, six of you and you're there working. Well, if you're going to go to the market, you're probably going to go with your American friends, and you're going to try to, you know, not... well, that's the thing about Americans who travel. We kind of storm through like bulls in China shops. But if you were there under the wire, if you were there illegally, you would want to make as little fuss as possible. And trying to go through a market and purchase things and do the stuff that it takes to live on a daily basis, that could be a terrifying experience, knowing that you're in a country, knowing that you're there illegally, and knowing that anyone can turn you in and you can be picked up at any moment, and who knows what will happen to you then. So for that reason, these people have to be very, very quiet about what they're doing and their activities. Now, this was not meant to be the immigration podcast. This was specifically regarding campgrounds and their relationship in agorism and in the underground economy and the unreported economy, or the some call it the unrecorded economy. But either way, what we're seeing take place here, and the thing that I'm describing, is an entire underground economy that takes place in providing a place for people to live and function without the state's involvement. And yet, at the same time, like I was saying, many of these people are working on the highways and earning their living through the very means that the state has provided for them. So, you know, it's like in the one place where you would think the state has the most amount of control, which is the highway system, it's like the hallmark, it's like the standard of, you know, anytime you talk to someone who is a statist and you begin to bring anarcho-capitalist concepts into the conversation, almost inevitably, one of the first two or three objections they're going to have to anarchy is this question of the highways. How would we have highways? How would we have roads without the state? So the roads, the highways, are paramount in the eyes of the statist as to why we have to have the state. And yet, the state can't control who works on the highways. Right there, working side by side with the U.S. citizen, is the illegal alien, earning the wages, taking the risks, sweating in the hot sun, freezing in the rain, in the pouring rain, right there side by side with the so-called legitimate citizen is the illegal alien under the nose of the state, and the state can't do a thing about it. Oh, it would if it could, because remember, that construction company doesn't want to take the risk. The construction company that's getting the kickbacks from the politician who's getting the campaign donations, that construction company certainly doesn't want to take the risk. The politician can't take the risk. So there's every motive within this process, and in addition to all that, here's the mainstream media demonizing these people constantly. So for every reason, we have the state in every possible way not wanting illegal aliens working on the highway crews, and yet they're working on the highway crews. They're right there. This reminds me of a biblical passage. I believe it's in Proverbs. I think it's in Proverbs. And it says, it's according to which translation you use. Some you refer to a spider and some refer to a lizard. I personally like the spider reference better. But it says that the spider, it says, behold the spider, and I'm misquoting it. So any Bible freaks out there that are going to yell at me for misquoting the Bible, I'm paraphrasing, okay? The King James Version of the Bible is a paraphrased Bible. So So if King James can paraphrase, I can paraphrase. Anyway, it says, behold the spider. The spider clings with his hands and is in the house of kings. You see, even the king, even the president, even the whatever, the richest people in the world, the most powerful people in the world, they still have cobwebs in their house because there's still spiders living in their house. They can't do a thing about it. That's the tenacity of the spider, that he can go anywhere he wants. And it doesn't matter how powerful you are, how big you are, how tiny that spider is. He can live anywhere he wants. He clings with his hands, and he makes a home among kings. And that's what those illegal aliens are doing. They're walking right into the king's house, and they're clinging on with their hands, and they're saying, I'm going to work, and I'm going to make a living. And then they disappear into the agora, and they don't even understand, or they don't even care about the philosophical angle of this. But I can see it, and I'm telling it to you, and now you can see it. It's here. It's underground. It's very real. The true economy. The true market. It's all around us, and the state can't stop it. And as it grows, and as more of these... more campers realize that there are alternatives to Federal Reserve notes, and as more campground owners begin to understand that there are alternatives to Federal Reserve notes, the situation becomes more and more out of control for the state. The state can't tax what it doesn't know about. The state can't regulate what it doesn't know exists. And day by day, we understand more and more that the state is a figment of our imaginations. And every day, more people realize that all we have to do to end the Fed, all we have to do to end the massive bureaucracies, all we have to do to stop the banksters, all we have to do to fight the corporations, all we have to do to break police brutality, all we have to do stop believing in the state and embrace your fellow human being in trade, in commerce, quietly, without the permission of the state, without the authorization of the state, without the licensing of the state, in freedom. For more on liberty, property rights, and the zero aggression principle, go to badquaker.com. And thank you again for listening.